This is the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2019, episode 25. We are going to go old school on this edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. That means I'm going to get all the sponsors out of the way right now instead of doing it on the front end. And of course, we do have to thank our good friend Dave Remington, who's been sponsoring and really presenting this podcast for a number of years now. Don't forget that the 2020 Remington Trophy celebration coming up on January 18th at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln.
Barely a month out.
And we should now know we're recording this. Rob and I are watching the Big Ten title game as we speak, so we really won't be able to talk about who wins this game because as we're talking right now, Wisconsin is winning. I don't know if that will hold up or not, but
it's early. We'll see what happens.
We do know that Oklahoma beat Baylor. That was a good game.
That was overtime. That was two games those teams played that were, I think the way one of the announcers phrased it, it was two instant classics, and he's kind of right. I mean, those were two great games.
And then we had LSU destroy Georgia.
Just stomped them. That game was, it was over before it started.
It really was. And Joe Burrow wrapped up the Heisman Trophy tonight.
I think he did. I'm definitely not an Ohio State fan. I've had a lot of appreciation for what Chase Young has done this year for Ohio State as a defensive lineman. And I like little wrenches in the works. And I would have loved to have seen a defensive lineman win the Heisman.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen.
It's not. Four touchdown passes, set an SEC record. And I think he was the second most touchdown passes in an SEC title game.
And, of course, Husker fans love that kid because his brothers went to school there. If dad has a connection to the school.
Pelini apparently hated the Burrows or something weird like that.
And see, blame Bo Pelini for everything. But again, the Remington Trophy celebration is going to be so much fun because we should know next week, as you are listening to this, who the Remington Trophy winner will be. What I like about the Remington Trophy, Dave takes all the politics out of it. You know, right now the Lou Groves Award is such a joke because they're having like fans vote. And it's going between Keith Duncan at Iowa and the Georgia kicker right now. And that's so stupid. I know it's worth one vote, but I don't like politics like that where it becomes a popularity contest. Dave takes the consensus of three All-American teams. That's your winner. Very simple. You know, he basically lets other people decide. So
he does, but I think it's other people that have a pretty good track record.
And I would agree with that. Dominic Raiola is coming back for the Ford Legends Award winner. He was the first ever Remington Award winner, so this ought to be a fun night. And then Margaret Corfora is going to be the cystic fibrosis speaker. She's got an amazing, amazing story. She's battled cystic fibrosis. I believe she's had a double lung transplant. Then she had to battle cancer. So these stories make you cry.
They always do. And the people they have that come back and give these kind of testimonials, they do a great job. And the biggest thing is it's a heck of a testament to where this money's going, to the benefit it has, to the progress that's been made due to this foundation.
Again, that's January 18th, Rococo Theater. For ticket and table information, go to RemingtonTrophy.com and follow along this week as we find out who the Remington Trophy winner will be. And that award will be, I believe, presented on the ESPN College Football Award Show. Now, it won't be part of the main stage, but I believe they do it beforehand and they get a little press time out of it, which is pretty cool.
It's nice. It's nice to see him do that. I think, you know, the whole ESPN Award Show has kind of been sort of it's kind of now outside of the Heisman Trophy presentation. I think it's almost the more, I don't know if respected is the right word, but when it comes to the people that are winning those individual awards, I think that's the show that people go and watch now.
Now, Infusion Brewing Company, we've been drinking Infusion Brewing Company beer for 3 years now, and they've been such a great sponsor. We're going to do another podcast before the end of the year, at least I hope. And I drove by the old Bohemian Cafe yesterday, Rob.
What's the open date?
I think they're still trying to get it figured out, but it's coming up. But you and I are going.
I'm excited for this.
To the Infusion Czech Beer Hall.
It is, because I'm Czech.
Yeah, and my wife is Czech.
And I like beer.
Yeah, and the only difference between you and I is I've actually been to the Czech Republic. I've been to Prague. I need to get you and Jen to go along with my
wife would tonight. Be willing to bet that the whole Czech thing, it's kind of like the Irish thing where you've got more people of Irish claiming Irish descent in America than actually live in Ireland. I'm willing to bet it's the same kind of thing with bow hunks here in the United States.
That's true, but I do know for a fact that my wife is half Czech, and her grandma spoke the language. There used to be like a Czechoslovakian newspaper in town that they used to print.
I actually did know that. And now the thing is, that's funny about it is I actually had a professor in medical school who his parents were from Czechoslovakia, big family. Now this guy's, he's retired now. He's in his probably late 60s, early 70s at this point. But a couple of his older siblings were also born in Czechoslovakia. So the family immigrated to the United States right before he was born. So he had several siblings that were born there. So the whole family spoke fluent Czech. And he'd see, every time I talked to him, he'd always try to talk to me in Czech. Now, my family, they came over in like the 1840s. My great-grandparents didn't speak a word of Czech.
Now, did you celebrate, because we just celebrated the Feast of St. Mikuláš or St. Nicholas. Did you guys ever do that growing up?
We never did. So we kind of hung more on the Scandinavian side, okay, because my mom is actually Scandinavian.
All right.
And so a bunch of Swedes. And so we always did kind of all these little.
Hence, that's why you're Lutheran and not Catholic.
Exactly. There you go.
You're Catholic light.
Catholic light. All the beer, meat on Fridays, and prophylactic clad sex. None of the guilt, baby.
Oh, Ticket Express, man. It was such a great season of Ticket Express. We did Ticket Talk all season long. We had so many listeners reach out and say, hey, thanks for the recommendation. They got tickets through Ticket Express. Chad, Jessica, the whole team down there, able to help a lot of people out.
It's mind-blowing what that guy can get tickets for.
And it really is anything. And when we kept telling people, hey, you can get tickets to other events besides Nebraska football in the College World Series, I know Jessica was getting tickets or calls for other college games, getting calls for NFL games.
Out-of-state stuff.
It's awesome. My son goes to the University of Kansas. When I need to go down to watch the Jayhawks play, I call those guys, say, hey, I'm going to go watch the Jayhawks. Can you help me out? Get me good seats? And they do that. So go to TicketExpress.com. It's TicketExpress.com. Of course, the holidays are around the season. If you are a Nebraska fan and you like to wear red, there's only one place to buy good Nebraska gear, and that's Husker Hounds. Go to HuskerHounds.com or visit one of Scott's three locations in the Omaha area. And Scott's been a friend of mine for a long, long time. Now, he gives me a hard time because he knows I'm an Iowa fan. But that dude,
thought you were a Cyclone fan.
Oh, God. Here we go. No, my wife is. My wife's an Iowa State grad. That's the funny thing. I mean, I've got this melting pot in this house, right? I mean, my daughter works at Ole Miss. We'll get to that story in a little bit. My son goes to KU. My wife went to Iowa State. I went to Grandview, but I grew up an Iowa fan. And then I've got you in this house more times than most people, and you're the Nebraska fan in this house. You're an honorary member of the Justice
House. I am. I'm like the cousin Eddie for the justices.
But yeah, check out especially his superstore on 84th. I can't even explain it when you go in it. It's like everything. If you can imagine I think Scott has it.
He does. I mean, from an apparel standpoint, he's kind of the go-to. One, yeah, because he does carry big and tall sizes.
And that's important.
So that is huge for a guy like me because I got long arms. I'm not the smallest person on the planet. He does a great job fitting me. He's done a lot, some out-of-state stuff. I know. I think he got a really nice Husker parka for Joel Wilkes. Got it shipped up to Portland, Oregon for him. He'll do anything for you. And if there's something you need and you can't find it, he will track it down. Now, if you're a memorabilia person too, his shops are basically kind of these little mini museums. And the great thing is it's all for sale. I mean, you may not like the price on it, but he's got some cool stuff. Yep. And we're talking stuff going back to Devaney, pre-Devaney. I mean, if you're looking for a Bob Devaney autograph, he's one of the few guys who has multiple Bob Devaney autographs up for sale in his shops. And so if you need that kind of stuff, he's the guy who has it.
HuskerMax.com has been distributing this podcast for a number of years. Can't thank David Max and Joe and the whole team there because they helped get the word out. And what we learned this week, Rob, is that a lot of people have been waiting for another podcast. I was kind of shocked. Now, we always kind of We take a little break after the season, but I'm getting ready to go to Italy for a week.
You've been doing that. Yeah. I mean, I've been busy with kids stuff. And then, I mean, you got the Thanksgiving holiday, which kind of everybody sort of shuts things down. And, well, I think Husker fans kind of shut down after that one. But, yeah, everybody came back, like, when's it coming out? Because I had a lot of friends texting and calling.
Yeah, and believe it, this is our 25th of the year. Now, to me,
that's a busy year.
That's a busy year. And we've been going nonstop really since, I believe, August 1st or really right before the Big Ten media days. So, you know, it is a grind. People may think, well, you guys get together once a week, drink beer. But it is a grind because you've got a job. I've got a job. You've got a family. I've got a family. So we just took a, you know.
Yeah, this, believe it or not, we're not too, like you said, we're not two jobless guys living in our parents' basement doing this shit. So.
Well, the biggest question I have, and, you know, we'll get to the Iowa game because, I mean, you're moving on now. But the biggest question I've gotten, and I'm sure you've gotten, is Tommy Frazier. Tommy Frazier.
Well, we had a lot of people asking us to comment on that.
Yeah, so we're going to start right off with Tommy Frazier. Now, Tommy was my first original co-host before you came on to Sports Sound Off. Tommy has always been one to speak his mind. He's never held back.
Not
a lot of filter.
You know, I shouldn't say it's not a no filter thing. It's just if he has an opinion about something, he's going to tell you.
Yeah. I mean, did you have a problem with what he said or with what he did?
I have not had a problem with anything anybody said. If you're a fan and you're pissed about something, now there's lines that you can cross, and I think usually it's when if you're going after a specific kid and singling somebody out, and it's kind of this, hey, you freaking suck, I kind of stuff. I don't want to get into that too much, although I guess I've been guilty of that a little bit. I mean, going all the way from Corey McEwen to Nick Gates over the years in terms of people I've commented on. I don't think I've ever said something that was, I guess, untrue would be what I would say. I mean, I don't think I've ever crossed the line in terms of saying it wasn't true. If a guy wasn't performing, I'm going to call that out. But I don't think Tommy did that in terms of saying something that wasn't true. I think, now, to my end, I mean, the way I felt was that he basically said, until we see a change, until we see changes that include coaching decisions, that seem to have at least very outwardly affected games, he's not going to get his hopes up, and he's not going to believe this turnaround's really in progress.
Well, what I found interesting about the whole bit, and I need you to tell me, because you're the expert here coming as a former player. I thought it was interesting that under Pelini, under Riley, under Callahan, if former players spoke out, it was revered, it was respected, it was like, man, listen to this guy.
Ooh, man, I don't know about that.
Well, I mean, it wasn't as criticized here because it's a former player criticizing a coach who is a former player.
I get that. I think the difference is before, when you saw that criticism, you didn't see, you never saw a former player, at least overtly, you never saw much former player criticism of Osborne, at least post 1991, 92.
I would agree with you on that.
I don't think you really saw much with Solich.
No.
You absolutely saw it. I think former players felt like they had a free rein when it came to Callahan, a little bit with Pelini. I think most former players actually kind of were a lot more okay with Pelini than fans might have thought they were. There was a lot of things I actually really liked about Pelini. And I think most former players will tell you that to some degree. I think Callahan and Riley were maybe the big two targets. And so when you see a former player going after a guy that I think a lot of people looked at as not untouchable, but at least it's a former player going after a former player. I guess that's the...
And a former quarterback going after a former quarterback.
Yeah, that's kind of the long and short of it. I mean, the question I always get asked is like, hey, is it true Tommy Frazier and Frost never got along or don't like each other? Or is it a one-way street? Does Tommy Frazier not like Scott Frost? I mean, I've been asked that question pretty frequently.
You know, I think I know Tommy pretty well. I mean, we've kind of lost touch over the years ever since, you know, he stopped doing sound off. But whenever we see each other, we're very cordial to one another. I could see where Tommy would rub people the wrong way, but I do know that Tommy just, he has his beliefs, he has his thoughts, and if you don't like him, you don't like him. He doesn't care if you don't like him. He doesn't.
He's like the Nebraska he's like the Travis Justice of Nebraska quarterbacks. He's out there just pissing everybody off.
No, I don't try to piss people off. I just try to be authentic. And people think that I say stuff just to get around. You know me well. I don't make shit up. I don't care. I say what's on my mind. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I'm pretty good at admitting when I'm wrong. But I think Tommy's just one of these guys who's like, fuck it. I'm going to tell you what I think. And this is the way I think.
And I agree. But I do think Tommy feels there's issues that aren't being commented on.
Are there? In your opinion, are there issues that aren't being commented on? Do you have a press? Do you have? I mean, Jason Peters says, "Yeah, I'm paraphrasing here. Ah, fuck, Tommy doesn't know what he's talking about. I'm on the inside."
All former players, we all think we're on the inside to some degree. Which I've also told people before, too. If you really want to know my opinion, I'll tell you, I knew exactly what happened from about 1990 to 1994. And then I know it secondhand till about 97. And after that, it's one of those, you know, I think I have maybe a bit of a unique perspective as a former player. But what's going on down there now is a hell of a lot different than anything I ever went through. And so it's kind of hard to know exactly what's going on. You ask the question, are things not being commented on that maybe should be? And I don't know if should be is the right word, but for me, it's hard to know. And the reason I say that it's hard to know is because I look at some of the teams Nebraska played. And I look at this season as on the whole, and there's a lot of parallels to last year. And I say that in the sense that I think if we had this same season last year, we'd still have that same sense of hope going into the second year because we'd be sitting there going, oh, my God, look how close we are. We should have beat Colorado. We should have been, and I know the whole coulda, woulda, shoulda, but we should have beat Colorado, should have beat Purdue, should have beat Indiana. I don't know if should's the right word, but God damn it, Iowa was on the freaking ropes.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to make an excuse for Iowa because you're exactly right, but it's typical Kirk Ferentz. If anybody follows Iowa football, if that dude has a lead at halftime, he's playing not to lose in the second half. He's never played to win, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
But that was a beatdown in the third quarter.
It was.
I mean, that wasn't a, hey, I'm playing conservative. That was a, holy shit, we got our ass kicked for all of the third quarter and about one and a half out of every three snaps of the
I'm not gonna argue quarter. With that. Because I can't. I mean, the tape doesn't lie. The only thing that I've got is that at the end of the game, they did I was surprised that when he got the ball that he ran a 2-minute offense. I thought he was gonna play for overtime. I really did.
But between those two teams, though, if there's offenses that I would trust in overtime, the offenses that I trust in overtime are those big play, the teams that can make the big play, have the kind of the shock and awe plays, have the flash and dash players, the guys who are like, we got four plays to go 25 yards, let's go do it. Iowa's, yeah, we can do that. We need 12 plays, though, to go 25 yards because that's our style.
but you know
and
what?
That's not overtime.
But that works for them, right? I mean, they finished 9-3. No, they lost three games by 14 points.
No, I get it. Nebraska, what was the stat? I saw like Nebraska lost, what was it, four games by like 17 points. I mean, it's.
And that shows you. Or
whatever
you,
it is, I'd have to go back and look, but it was something like that.
And that shows you the razor thin margin in college football today.
Oh, it is.
Between great, good and fucking bad.
Well, and I wouldn't even say great, but I think there's a huge pool of teams in the middle. Because, I mean, there is way more than a razor-thin margin between Nebraska and
Ohio State.
Ohio State or Wisconsin, who's kind of gone through the last 2-3 weeks here on a they've been on a tear. LSU, Alabama, even if you want to look at Georgia, Clemson, there is more than a razor thin margin there. But you've got a huge group of teams, and the reason when that I'm a little reluctant to say there's some stuff that needs to be said, because I look at, you know, we're really pretty freaking, I mean, close to Iowa. It took two last minute, basically it took two last year, a true walk-off field goal. This year, the pretty darn much the equivalent of a walk-off field goal to beat Nebraska. And that's 2 years in a row. I mean, Iowa's definitely got the upper hand. It ain't by much. And Nebraska, like I said, Nebraska's four just agonizing, frustrating losses from being a 9-3 team also.
So I'm going to ask you.
And if Nebraska was 9-3, we'd all be sitting here like ecstatic as hell about the progress.
Well, you would, because I don't know if I would.
You probably would. That means we beat Iowa.
Exactly. I'm going to ask you then, if you were to criticize Scott Frost in an area or two, or if you could sit down with Scott and say, what the fuck are you thinking? Where would it be?
One running game. And now I get it. You've got some definite just, and again, I know everybody, well, you're still blaming Riley. Well, you know what? Fucking A. He trashed. Yep.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to stop you.
He trashed this roster, I'm not done with my thought.
Okay, I know.
All I was going to say is there's still a talent gap and experience and developmental gap on this team. And I said this freaking 2 years ago. Not 2 years ago. Year and a half ago. Well, I guess it was. It was 2 years ago when Frost got hired. I said there's some problems, and these are going to be at least a 2-3 year fix when it comes to especially the physical development, but the talent and physical development. 2 years ago, I said this is a 2-3 year problem. And when I said 2 year problem, I don't mean this problem was fixed by December of 2019. What I mean is you're not going to get to a point where that fix is starting to happen until December of 2019, and you're not going to see anything until at least 2020. Now, the caveat there is I also said this is a 2-3 year problem before you see the level of development that these guys need, which takes us past next year. Now, I know for a fact some of the Nebraska coaches a year and a half ago, they were looking at 2020 as still potentially being a rebuild year. We've talked about this. I mean, it's not like we haven't touched on that. The thing is that where I think there might be a problem is I would have liked to have seen better overall discipline at this point. The penalties were still a problem. The little mistakes were still a problem. The better understanding of game situations is still a problem. There was the play in the Iowa game where Martinez ran out of bounds on that last series where they could have burned more clock. And he stayed in bounds, and I think it was on a second down play. I mean, Nebraska could have chewed up some serious time there and essentially truly forced overtime. We didn't, and that didn't happen because Martinez was, I don't think he had an understanding of that game situation at that point in time. And that's something as a player, when you're a second year starting quarterback, even if you're only a true sophomore, if you're a second year starting quarterback, you got to be sitting there realizing, hey, if we don't get the first down here, and I get the whole Scott Frost, you got to play without fear thing, but you got to be sitting there thinking, hey, if we don't get the first down on this series, we're giving the ball back to Iowa. And it really behooves us to burn off as much time as we can and leave them with the least amount of clock to work with.
So I want to ask you about Scott, and because I tend to agree with other people in the media here. And that is, it seemed a lot this year that he did try to openly pass blame onto A, players, or B, former coaches. And I don't know if that's leadership, Rob. I mean, we know it's true.
But I mean,
but don't you say, listen, it's on me. Just say, you know what? It's my job. It's on me.
But I heard Frost say that a lot too.
Yeah, but I think he does it at the wrong times. How's that?
I'll give you that. But I also think that's an experienced thing. You had a guy with a grand total of 4 years as a head coach. I mean, crap, you got Lane Kiffin still getting hired for SEC jobs, and he's basically, from a Twitter standpoint, he's like the Donald Trump of,
you know what? I love it, though.
College football.
You know what?
Coaches.
I love it because he's and he says, I'm not going to apologize. He goes, I want to have fun. And
I get that, but I mean, I also think Lane Kiffin is all about Lane Kiffin.
Absolutely.
If I was a player, I would have zero faith in that guy as a head coach. He went and did his penance at Florida Atlantic?
Yes.
And it was one of those, you think the, I mean, the guy's never stuck anywhere.
Yeah, but would you want to stay in Boca Raton? No.
I don't know if I've ever spent much time in Boca Raton, though.
And actually, at Florida Atlantic. I mean, you knew it. I mean, he won 2 conference championships there in 3 years. He won 10 games twice. I mean,
you know, I'm not faulting that. I guess my point is that, I mean, he left Tennessee. He stunk up the place at...
Actually, go look at his USC record, and he inherited a shit show from Pete Carroll. They were on probation. Go look at his win.
Also, now it's okay to blame the guy who
No. I actually think he won more games than he probably should have at USC. I thought he overachieved at USC.
Although I look at USC, and USC is one of those programs, and the reason coaches have a short leash there is because it's a place like Texas, Florida, Florida State, Miami, Oklahoma, where... God, if you can't win there.
Yeah, but he was reduced to like 68 scholarships. I mean, Pete Carroll.
Yeah, but I think he was also, he had sort of that Bo Pelini effect where he got fired not necessarily solely on the wins and losses. He got fired because he just rubbed people the wrong freaking way.
I would agree with you on that. But, you know, Pat Hayden fired him, and Pat Hayden didn't last very long
either. No, and I get that. But I think it was some of that was due to you look at some of the decisions Pat Hayden made that just, God, talk about decisions that bite a guy in the ass. I mean, Sarkisian, Lane Kiffin. I mean, it was just one little PR disaster after the other. And that's my point about Lane Kiffin. It's not necessarily the wins and losses. Yeah, fine. He didn't get fired at USC because of wins and losses. He got fired because he pissed off the people he shouldn't have been pissing off. But I also think he does that anywhere he's going to go, or has done that anywhere he's been, and he's going to continue to do it anywhere he goes.
Now,
I'll give him 5 years before he's got Ole Miss pissed at him like Lord knows what.
Well, I now, as you know, my daughter works at Ole Miss, and one of the interesting enough is if you don't think football is important to these southeastern schools, especially schools like Mississippi, you're crazy. Enrollment is way down at Ole Miss, and they solely point it towards football. If football is not winning, because what happens, Rob, and I didn't know this till my daughter started working there, is there is a reciprocal on the Arkansas side and the Alabama side where these Mississippi kids can go to those schools for in-state tuition. Everybody's flocking to Tuscaloosa. Like, I didn't know this until I was down there, but Oxford's only 3 hours from Tuscaloosa. So
that's pretty damn close.
That changes, like, fuck it, I'm going to go watch good football, right? So after Hugh Freeze got fired, enrollment's just plummeted because the football team is. So Lane Kiffin's going to bring kids back to Ole Miss.
We'll see. And like I said, he pulls a Tennessee there.
Yeah.
The guy's got like 9 lives, though. That's what cracks me up. And I think I put the tweet out there that he's like the Harrison Beck of coaches. I mean, just a lot of shtick, a lot of personality.
Yeah.
It may not be a personality you like, but a lot of personality. Championship talker.
Do you think he can win at Ole Miss? I mean, Cutcliffe did to an extent.
I don't think Lane Kiffin's that good of a coach.
I think
he's a somewhat innovative, highly intelligent offensive coordinator. But And Florida Atlantic's one thing. I mean, I think if you can get a team like Florida Atlantic, and you know, and maybe this is a critique on Frost. If you can get a team like Florida Atlantic or Central Florida or Memphis, we'll find out with Norvell going to Florida State. It's interesting to me in these conferences that maybe you only have to get a school just a pretty minuscule amount better, and all of a sudden you're going to run roughshod through the rest of the conference. I mean, what Dykes has done at SMU. I mean, again, is it really that hard to do? And I say that on a comparative level. I think the harder thing to do is what, say, like Rule's done down at Baylor, where 3 years they're in the Big 12 title game.
Which is crazy.
Nearly won it. And it's, you know, the thing is, and it wasn't an overnight success. I mean, his first season was a disaster, which everybody knew was going to be. But then he went something like 6-6 or 7-5 last year. And then he had a great season this year. But again, I think Baylor is a team that kind of was a little bit primed for success. They'd had the success under Art Briles. I think they still had the infrastructure. I think they still had the administrative and student support. They just needed to get a good coach in there who needed a couple of years to get some turnaround athletically. And he did a great job of it.
What do you think, and we'll get back to Nebraska stuff, but you mentioned Norvell, the Memphis coach, which Memphis beat Cincinnati in the American Athletic
Conference.
Another
great game, by the way, which Memphis almost gave that right back to Cincinnati.
Do you think that will fire Florida State fans up? Do you think that's a hire that they get excited about, or is that one you're going to have to ease into? Because your daughter goes to school at Florida State.
Yeah, which you got to keep in mind, though, too, as big a deal as it is for Florida State fans, it's not SEC, it's not Nebraska, it's not Notre Dame. I mean, they sell out the big games, but that's really about it.
No.
So I think it's a solid hire. I mean, he did great at Memphis, but again, I think he had a little bit of a cushier conference. I think in the ACC, you just got to get past Clemson's like the big dog. Clemson and Miami are the big dogs you got to beat. And I think if you at least knock off Miami and or have a good showing against Florida, you're going to do just fine. And if he does that, then he's going to be fine.
All right, let's go back to Nebraska. A lot of people talking about the quarterback situation. You brought up Adrian Martinez, some of the decision-making. You had McCaffrey. You had Vedrill. We hear there's going to be an open quarterback competition going into the spring.
God, did not feel like it during the season. I mean, it felt like Martinez, you're it no matter what. It doesn't matter. Somebody else can look better, can have the hotter hand. We're still putting you right back out there. And I don't – and maybe – and again, maybe I'm just layperson enough of it at this point that there's stuff I don't see. I just thought I would have liked to have seen more consistent time given to McCaffrey, given some of his productivity that we saw. I really would have liked to have seen what he could have done. Now, part of the problem what game was it? Was it Indiana that I think it was Indiana or Purdue? I think it was the Indiana game that I think McCaffrey played pretty extended minutes in, and he got banged up and got hurt. I mean, it's part of me kind of wonders if Frost is trying to save McCaffrey. Let's not get this guy hurt during a redshirt year. Let's get his four games in, get some experience, and then we're going to have him for another 4 years after this one, and let's maybe keep him healthy.
Do you think, and I'm only asking this, do you think it's possible that after the spring, McCaffrey says, I'm out of here?
I could see it with any of those guys.
Even Vedrill?
Not Vedrill.
Federal's sticking around.
I mean, his dad's from here. The kid's from Wahoo. That one, I say his dad. His family's from here. So that's that one I doubt. But I say that. Somebody asked me, what if McCaffrey gets named the starting quarterback? And the first thing I said was, I could see Martinez.
I was going to say, somebody's leaving. My prediction, and I could be wrong, somebody's leaving after spring ball.
But that happened. It happened when I played. I mean, yes. Like I said, people keep thinking, oh, this is a new phenomenon. No, absolutely not. Guys transferred all the time when I played. It is not a new phenomenon. When I played, we had three scholarship quarterbacks that left after my sophomore year because you had Tommy Frazier locking down the starting job and Brooke Behringer right there with them. And everybody was thinking, I'm not beating out one guy, let alone two. And the second stringer is a likely NFL player. I mean, you could see that in practice even then.
Yeah.
Guys left. Quarterbacks left. You saw Tony Veland and Cluster Johnson hit campus as dual threat quarterbacks, scholarship dual threat quarterbacks. Within a year, one's a wingback, the other's a safety.
Do you agree with my assessment that somebody's leaving after spring? Do you think that do you agree with that?
I think it's that would be more likely if McCaffrey becomes the starter. I think the higher likelihood the scenario that would be more prone to triggering a transfer would be McCaffrey getting named the starter, and I think Martinez would transfer. The other way around, maybe a little bit less so, and the reason I say that is because I think McCaffrey would still be in a situation where, because of the red shirt this year, he still had – let's say Martinez plays for – is a four-year starter. McCaffrey would still have 2 years of eligibility left after that. At the same time, for the next 2 years, you'd have kind of this Eric Crouch, Bobby Newcomb thing going on, where McCaffrey would be getting snaps at quarterback, but he'd also be playing wide receiver, running back.
A multi-purpose player.
He would. He'd be Slash. He'd be Cordell Stewart with the Steelers. You know, and I say that in all seriousness.
Antoine Randall L.
Yeah. He'd be the guy they'd be like, all right, we're going to put you freaking everywhere. And if I was a guy like McCaffrey who wanted to play quarterback, but I mean, when you look at McCaffrey, do you look at a guy like him who's in the same mold as Adrian Martinez,
yeah,
which is same mold as Taylor Martinez. They're dual threat quarterbacks.
Though I think McCaffrey's got a better arm.
I agree. Outside of the incredibly, incredibly rare Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, I mean, that's a rare bird.
Yeah.
Don't sit here and tell me, oh, there's all these great examples in the NFL. No, there's not. There's a few, and they're few and far in between, and they tend to get beat up because every time they run, they're getting hit by NFL defenders, and those guys hit really, really hard. And so, in the scope of things, do you look at a quarterback in the Luke McCaffrey mold as a true dual threat quarterback and look at that guy and go, oh yeah, NFL written all over this guy? Or do you look at him and go, huh, if this guy's going to make it to the NFL, he's going to do it as like Cordell Stewart or Antoine Randall L did, as a guy who could, in a pinch, be your third-string quarterback, but the rest of the time, he's a slot wide receiver. He's a third-down running back. He's a kick returner. Now, if you're looking at that, if you're looking at it from the latter, absolutely. And so if I am Luke McCaffrey, I don't think that's a bad deal. Show up. Go play some wide receiver, play some running back, return some kicks. Show those guys at the next level you can do that and do it successfully and at the same time be a good team player with a lot of buy-in, and then spend two years doing that. Be a jack of all trades, doing a little of everything for the offense for a couple of years, and then turn around and be the quarterback for 2 years, because the NFL loves the multi-purpose guys. If they got a guy who – hey, we don't need to have just a kick returner on our roster because we got this guy who's a really good third down running back and can return kicks. Or we got this guy who is like Cordell Stewart, who can be a wide receiver, can return kicks, and oh, in a pinch, he could be the third string quarterback on the team as well, too. Now we don't need to sign another quarterback. God.
They have one coming in this year.
Logan Smothers.
Yeah.
Wait, you're talking about Nebraska.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you've got another one coming in.
So do you, I mean, do you think both Martinez and McCaffrey tell Scott Frost, you got to name a starter? I know it sounds weird to be telling the head coach, but these guys say, listen, you got to name a starter after spring. I mean, players have leverage question. Now.
They do, but God damn it, they always did. I just said that.
Yeah, I
mean,
I know.
That leverage has always been there, just because now you have the transfer portal. You can't tell me that guys didn't have a little bit of that leverage in the past. They do. They do have that leverage. That's not new, though. Now, maybe there's some slightly less hurdles to jump over and hoops to jump through to have that leverage, but that leverage has always been there, and it's something coaches have always had to worry about. But it's also why coaches always want two or three guys at every position. You don't want to be in a position like Nebraska was in last year, where Martinez gets dinged up and you got to put Andrew Bunch in. And after that, that's all you got. I mean, you need to have – you need to be in a situation where Tommy Frazier can go down and you've got a Brooke Berenger. That's what good teams have.
So as you look back at this season and then look forward to next season, give me three things that they must improve on before you – and if they don't, you hit the panic button.
God, it's easy and it's all on offense. Offensive line development. Offensive line has to get better. And I think we see a different lineup next year. In my head, I could be wholly wrong here. But I look at Bryce Benhard at right tackle. Matt Farniok at right guard, Juergens at center, Ethan Piper at left guard, and Hymus at left tackle. And that's three, I mean, not three new faces, but that's three new position group players from this year to next. Two new guys, but three guys at new spots. So you've got to have development. You've got to have an improvement in terms of overall talent and productivity out of the offensive line. The other two is things we've talked about multiple times in podcasts this year, is there's things you need for any offense to work. You can't be one-dimensional, and Nebraska's offense was incredibly one-dimensional. It's either going to be Martinez running the ball or somehow trying to get it to Nebraska's three-headed combination of a single hybrid third-down running back slot wide receiver, which was Mo Washington, Spielman, Wandale Robinson. That's a niche role that all three of those guys play, and you can't build an offense around a niche role. You got to have an every-down running back. You got to have wide receivers that can stretch the field. And until the last few games with Mills, Nebraska didn't have the running back.
I liked Mills. I thought Mills, I like him.
He improved a lot. And I thought he kind of got in a groove a lot. I think the offensive line started developing a little bit. And I think the coaches developed a little bit more comfort with that. But you're going to need more than just Mills. You're going to need a continued development from Mills, and you're going to need like a Raheem Johnson, somebody else to step up and do some damage on first and second down. You need to be able to take a guy like Wandale Robinson and have them not be your featured running back. You need to have J.D. Spielman just, you know what, let him just go be a true slot wide receiver, and you got to give him some help. And right now, the scary thing is, for me more than anything, is where I look at that wide receiver spot. I don't see younger guys on that roster who I look at and say, these guys are going to be the ones who step up next year. I do not see that yet. So there's going to need to be some JUCO guys or some recruits that come in that I hope to God can fill that role, because we don't have him on the team right now. And I don't think, and we're not getting Andre Hunt back.
Did you go through three?
That was three.
That was three. So nothing on defense? I mean, come on.
Yeah, you know, I was actually, I cannot remember who put this stat out there, but they went into opponents' average starting field position last year versus this year. And opponents this year had an average shorter field by like 11 yards. I don't remember the exact number, but the interesting thing was, is Nebraska's defense from a like points scored per opponent's drive was down this year compared to last. So opponents actually were given a shorter field this year and scored fewer points with it. So the defense made some improvements. Now there's some games that were just flat out ugly. Now, are there things to improve on defense? They need better conditioning and development too. They need way more depth. There's some hole. You're going to have to fill Darian Daniels' spot at that nose position. Hopefully a guy like Ty Robinson can jump in there and do the damage that guys think he's going to be able to do. They need to be able to generate a pass rush that was essentially near non-existent the whole year. So there's definite things they can improve on defense. But I actually thought going from last year to this year, the big deficit, the big problem area, the thing that kept Nebraska from jumping over, getting over that hump and going from a 4-8 season to only a 5-7 season, when it should have probably been a 9-3 season, was the offensive issues. And some of that's on, and some of that I will say is on Martinez. I do think, and finally after the Iowa game, the mainstream media, which is Omaha World Herald essentially, even they were willing to say something just wasn't right with him this year. Lord, I don't know what it is. Was it off the field stuff? Was it social stuff? Was it injuries? Did he have some things going on from an injury standpoint? Right at the start of the year, I know, because when we had Mitch Sherman in, God, that seems like forever ago, Mitch made the point, he goes, God, man, the guy spent all that time learning the offense and going through reads instead of just being I'm just going to throw the ball to Stanley Morgan or J.D. Spielman, and that's all I'm going to do, which made him look pretty good when he did it. Now he's sitting back there, and he's going his first read, then his second read, then his third read, then his fourth read. Now he's going to go back to that first read one more time. Now he's going to maybe take off and run. Whoops, he got sacked. When last year was just, is Morgan open? Is Spielman open? Nope, I'm running. That was Mitch's take on why he seemed reluctant or slow or less reactive this year as opposed to last year. And again, Mitch made that observation in week three when we were still seeing that late in the season, the Iowa game. Yeah, I don't think that's it anymore. Something else was going on, and I don't know what it is. There's a lot of rumors floating around out there, but I don't know what it is, but I do think he was a different player. And, you know, you ask me, is there something that maybe Frost could have done differently in terms of dealing with that? And if it was an injury thing, if it was, you know, let's say it wasn't an injury thing. Let's say some of these off-the-field rumors are true. And let's say there's something going on in real life with him off the field. The things that he's dealing with. Well, okay, fine. Maybe you're actually doing a better service to Martinez by saying, hey, you've got some stuff going on. You don't need to have to worry about bailing out the offense and winning games for us. We're going to put McCaffrey in for a couple of full quarters every game and just get... Let's let him kind of carry things a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's see what he can do. Clear your mind. Don't worry about it. You're still going to be the guy. Get everything else taken care of off the field. And when you do, come back, and if you're the and if that old Taylor Martinez is still in there, then you're going to win back the starting quarterback job without a problem. Because Martinez at his prime last year was way better than anything we had at any point in time this year.
Should fans be concerned at all about the type of player that Scott Frost is recruiting, character-wise? Maurice Washington, Andre Hunt, Katerian Lagron.
You always have bad apples in the bunch. You give me 150 guys, there's going to be two or three that have some issues. There just are. You can't weed out everything.
But don't you just cut them loose? Don't you just say go away?
I think you try to do what you feel is best big picture. And I think there was a little bit of that with Mo Washington, where I'll be interested to see what happens with Mo Washington going forward, because you have a guy who seems to have a habit of less than ideal decision-making capabilities when it comes to benefiting his own best interests. He does not make decisions that are the best for Mo Washington. So, I think a kid like that, if you can keep him in a highly structured environment, i.e. the whole Tom Osborne, Lawrence Phillips thing, you're probably doing both the kid and society a favor. There's a little bit of stuff in terms of, hey, at some point you kind of got to allow the law to do what the law does. And I don't know all the ins and outs of Lagron and Hunt. No criminal charges were ever filed. No.
This was a university investigation.
Yeah. And so now you say that doesn't mean there's not a legal stake here for the university and these players, because there is, because if the university is found in violation of Title IX, which this falls under, it's a Title IX issue, that if you're not treating these guys, or if you're not regarding these guys or disciplining these guys in the same manner you would any other student, then that comes back on the university from a legal liability standpoint. And so that's where the university comes in and says, hey, there's enough smoke here. Where there's smoke, there's fire. You've got a 2.5-year suspension.
That's an eternity. Now they're going to appeal. And,
well, it is, but that it's not the first time it happened. Who was there's the big D lineman under Pelini that happened to, and he ended up appealing, and the university denied the appeal, and he transferred to Youngstown State. So I'm under the understanding both these guys have actually entered into the transfer portal. And for Frost, this might have been a little bit of a, I don't know if win-win's the right way to say it. It's sort of a not-lose-not-lose situation, rather, might be the better way to phrase it. He doesn't have to cut him loose.
That
university did it for him. And so he can sit there and say, like, from a recruiting standpoint, hey, are you going to stand by me? He can sit there and look like the guy who, no, I didn't cut these guys from the team. University did. University put a 2.5-year suspension on them, which is the equivalent of that. I don't want to say washing your hands of it, but again, this was this might end up being a really nice not lose situation because of that he doesn't have to cut them loose just by virtue of that 2.5-year suspension.
Let's get to a couple questions before we wrap it up. This comes from TJ, who's in the UK.
Nice. Across the pond.
Yeah, he goes, guys, I haven't seen a podcast in a while. Well, here it is. With the Tommy thing going on, I was wondering what Dr. Rob's view of Nebraska fans' potential to cause difficulties in the program is. And that means just the noise, the criticism, and maybe, you know, getting coaches and players to hear
it's
that.
Always there. It kind of depends on the background situation. I mean, obviously there was massive fan outcry for both Mike Riley and Callahan at the end of their tenures in at Nebraska that I think definitely played into it. I mean, that does, I mean, that stuff does get back to the athletic, to the AD's office. Those guys do end up hearing that, and I think it has an impact. In a year like this, where I think you're still in kind of this rebuild mode, I think it's taken with a little bit of a more of a grain of salt. And you can, if you could look down in Lincoln and say, like, okay, you know what? There's a lot of talent on this team. This is some legit, these are some legit players. Okay, you know what? Callahan had guys going to the NFL every year. Okay? The guys he was recruiting were going to the NFL. You could sit there, look at that situation, and say, hey, this guy's got a roster full of NFL guys, and they are not producing. Who from Nebraska is going to get drafted this year?
Nobody.
I could potentially maybe see Darian Daniels. I'm looking at like all the seniors, and I just there's not a lot. I mean, one, there's not a lot of seniors, but I don't see a lot of guys here that I'm looking at going like, oh yeah, surefire draft pick right there. There's just not. And that speaks volumes to what Frost is working with. And again, anytime you're sitting there and you're going, hey, this guy's got a ton of talent. It's obvious talent. It's easy to evaluate how good this talent is, and yet they're not winning. Then that fan noise has a lot of weight. I mean, the losses themselves have a lot of weight. Then, right now, you can look down in Lincoln, and I mean, it's still as much as. You've got a lot of fans saying, hey, you got to quit blaming Mike Riley. Hey, you got to quit blaming the talent level. Okay, you got to be a freaking idiot to look down there and realize and not realize that there is still massive swaths worth of talent gap on both sides of the ball. And until they get that remedied, now that could be a problem in and of itself. If it's year four and you haven't remedied that problem, then that's a problem in and of itself, and that's worth getting fired for. But if Frost gets to year four and we're looking at this going like, oh my God, this is a good team. There are some serious ball players on this team, and we're still sitting at 5, 6, 7 wins, there's a problem.
Tim in Vancouver, Washington says, hey, Doc, hey, Travis, is it just me or does this recruiting class seem to be filling slowly? I'm the wrong person to ask about recruiting because I hate recruiting. He goes, you know, there's been more than 400 offers out there, yet Nebraska struggled to get to 25. Are people already wising up to the spiel? It's starting to get scary. You had a JUCO kid decommit this week. You had some people commit. And I was going to ask you, and Tim, I'm going to kind of jump on your question here. I like the early signing period. It's coming up on the 20th. I like the December signing period.
And I think
period.
That makes people a little jumpier about filling the class though, yeah. too. That's the downside to it. I don't think everybody would be sitting there going like, oh, we got till February, which you still do. It's just I think people want to see 19, 20, 21 signees by December now. And I don't know if you're necessarily going to see that. I do think there's a little bit of a slow game being played by Frost and his staff with a lot of local kids, because I do see a lot of local kids that I think would have gotten offers earlier in the game if not for the fact that they're here in Nebraska, and I think everybody figures, well, God, there's a chance we could get this kid as a preferred walk-on. And I think Frost is kind of gotten almost, I don't know if comfortable is the right word, but he's gotten comfortable with a lot of kids who are willing to say, yeah, I'll take that preferred walk-on spot. There's a lot of really good ball players I'm looking at that I don't want to say the kids are making a bad decision, but Frost has a bunch of kids, and I don't. Maybe this is actually a testament to his recruiting ability, and I think in a way it is. he's getting a lot of kids to turn down 1AA and D2 offers and walk on at Nebraska. 5-6 years, 3-5 years ago, you didn't see that happening. A kid would take that scholarship offer at North Dakota State, South Dakota State.
Yeah, we talked about, yeah.
Even a D2 school, Shadron, Kearney, Northwest Missouri State, as opposed to walking on at Nebraska. And now all of a sudden, over the last year and a half, 2 years, you're seeing a lot of those kids taking that preferred walk-on offer and coming to Nebraska.
If you and I have had this conversation, I think we agree, and that is more power to you if that's what you believe in. But if you're turning down like a Wyoming, something like that, it's a full ride. That's
K-State,
just,
Iowa
stupid.
State. Yeah.
It's stupid.
I agree.
That's why you and I have had that conversation. I mean, I get the North. Okay, you don't want to go to FCS. You think you can play division. That's great, Big Ten. But if you're turning down a Power 5 school or even a full ride in the Mountain West, that's just dumb. I mean, but that's just me. Roger in Olathe, Kansas says, hey, he brings up player sabotage. I'm going to shorten this a little bit. He says, in sports, my definition of player sabotage is the following: to disrupt or cause to fail the outcome of a play by participants, willful or purposeful negative execution of his responsibility within the play's framework. Using that definition, there were examples of that occurring by a few players on both sides of the ball in the Iowa game and pretty much every game all season. Interested in your thoughts and opinions.
I don't know about the willful part of it. Now, do I think there's a subconscious level of that? Yeah, I do. I think there's you got a third of this team that was brought in by Mike Riley still, a little more, probably about 40% of the team still Mike Riley guys. And I think it's hard for those guys to still fully buy in with this staff. I think you've got a huge number of guys who are still out there playing and going, well, I was a Mike Riley guy, and this was the way Riley thought, and this is the philosophy he subscribed to. And, you know, I don't know if caring this much about a win is that big of a deal. Sort of that little bit of a mild laissez-faire, lackadaisical attitude towards how you play the game. And I think there's still a little bit of that. I should say a little bit. There's a reasonable amount of that on the team. I'm not sure it's truly willful, like, yeah, fuck these guys. I'm gonna purposefully botch this play, yeah, just to screw the coaching staff or screw the rest of the team. I don't think that happens, but I think there's a lack of overall discipline amongst a number of the players that shows up and has shown up week in and week out.
Bradley says, hey guys, who's the best 5-7 Power 5 team this year? Nebraska, Colorado, Oregon State, West Virginia, TCU, Syracuse, Duke, or Army? Well, you got to throw Nebraska out because it lost head-to-head to Colorado. I'll answer this before you do. I don't know if there is a best 5-7 because I think they each had different parts of the season where they were better. I would say at the end of the season, West Virginia might have been the better one of all those because it came on late and started playing a lot better.
They did. They actually played. I watched them play a few times here latter part of the season. Give me the list again.
Nebraska, Colorado, Oregon State, West Virginia, TCU. Max Duggan.
Oregon State played good. Actually played some good football towards the end of the year. TCU, you started talking about Duggan from
that dude's. You know, he's a true freshman kid. Yeah, he's going to be good.
I actually thought I'm probably going to say TCU, but I think
they were wavy, man.
They were, but I think they also dealt with a lot of injuries this year. They had a lot of injuries, and I think you take a true freshman quarterback, that kind of contributes to that up and down nature. I think that was actually a pretty solid football team. That give them a year, they're going to be pretty solid. Get those guys healed up, get healthier. That's going to be a pretty good team again.
If we didn't get to your questions, I'm sorry. Don't worry. We're going to have more podcasts before the end of this year. And, of course, I think Rob and I are planning on podcasting even more in 2017, trying to do one a month for sure. Maybe if the spirit moves us, we might do two a month.
We've done it. Usually we'll actually do. I mean, we've done a couple leading up to the Remington Trophy.
Yeah.
We talk about that.
Well, and maybe once they announce who the winner is and I get back from Italy, yeah, I'm going to go to Europe for a week. You don't mind that, do you?
Fine, asshole.
So I need to get to Europe. I need to decompress and just kind of escape for a little bit. We can get Dave on and talk about the winner in this year's event. And yeah, so we're
going to go check out the Czech beer hall at the old Bohemian.
We can record live down there, which would be, I think it'd be a lot of fun. I think we get some good people down there.
Still drinking Fusion beer.
That's right, because we love to drink beer. But if you want to send us questions, feel free to do so. DocTalkSports@gmail.com. That's DocTalkSports@gmail.com. If you don't follow Dr. Rob on Twitter, please do so, because he's pretty active on the Twitter. He likes the Twitter @DocTalkSports. Again, we need to thank our sponsors who've been with us for the last couple of years. Without them, this podcast is not even possible. That would be the presenting sponsor, the Remington Trophy. Then you have Infusion Brewing Company, who gives us beer, lets us drink their beer, which is really, really nice of them, because they, and this, I'm telling you,
beer.
This was good beer this year.
It was a week in and week out.
It was hats off to all the brewers and everybody at Infusion, because they did a great job. Chad at Ticket Express stepped up his game and really believes in the podcast, brought on Ticket Talk this year. I know he had fun doing it, and I hope you guys have fun supporting Ticket Express. Scotty at Husker Hounds, just a cool dude, a passionate dude, and has three great stores in the Omaha area. You can also purchase online at huskerhounds.com. And our good friends at Husker Max, who put this thing out and helped distribute this podcast. Everybody who supports us, we thank you. We thank you for listening. We'll be back. We're not going anywhere. But hope you enjoyed this wrap-up. And happy holidays. And Dr. Rob and I will be back hopefully before Christmas. Hopefully before Christmas. That's our goal. If we don't talk to you before Christmas, Rob, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Everybody, thanks for listening. This has been the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy.